still on the bottom of the first page, right?
Right, Yoash.
We're about ready to go.
Okay. All right.
100 years of good management.
So, Yoash is a good guy. He starts off good, as you can see from the pictures in the end. That's a wonderful, yeah. This is.
Why is it in Yehoash here when it's Yoash?
It happens a lot. It's not Yonatan, 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 Yehonadav, Yosef, Yehosef.
See, there's a Yehoash and
Ben Shevash and Yehoash Bimalcha. He was 7, he became David, the child that they whisked away from Natalia, and he managed to survive when he was, not that he was old enough, I might have waited longer to crown the king, it's just that this is when they managed to kill the woman who was killing all those descendants of David, Natalia, remember her from last week. So when they managed to depose her from the throne, however old he would be, that's when they make him king. He's the only one left. Okay, so let's continue. Pasuk Beis, Mishnah Sheva.
Mishnah Sheva, Yehu Malach Yehoash, V'arba'im Shana Malach V'Yushalayim, V'Shem Yimod Tzivya Mid'er Sheva.
Okay. So, you look at the chart, in the 7th year of Yehu, here would be the 5th year of Yehu. We can always be 2 years off. Depending on whether it's the beginning of his year, the end of his year, right? We're always a bit off on those years, but that's perfectly okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he ruled for 40 years, that you can see from the chart pretty easily. Okay. And his mother's name is Tzivia. Okay. Became a famous name. Mm-hmm. Chazal said good things about her, that she was pious. She was a poor woman. Mm-hmm. Why do we say that? Because if a 7-year-old is good, it must mean that he has some good influences in his life. Okay, let's go to Gimel. Richard, Bayaz, Yehoash.
Bayaz, Yehoash, Hayashar, Be'enei, Hashem, Kal, Yamav, Asher, Horahu, Yehoyada, HaKohen.
Now, Yehoyada. From the cantillation, you might draw that Yehoash did the right thing, the straight path in the eyes of Hashem all his days, the way he was taught by Yehoyada HaKohen. Rashi knows that that is simply not the case. So Rashi reads it slightly differently than the cantillation. Because the cantillation says stop at the word Kol Yamav. Mm-hmm. Yehoash did the right thing, the just thing in the eyes of God all his days that Yehoyada was HaKohen was his guide.
Because of him, he turned bad. Mm-hmm.
Because after Yehoyada died, he turned bad and actually killed Yehoyada's son, Zechariah.
Right.
So you would more like...
He was killed as well at the end.
Yehoash? Yeah, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. So he was assassinated.
So it'd be more like all his days that Yehoda,
HaKohen,
was instructing
Yehoda,
him.
Right.
As the influence was there, as long as it lasted.
Right, that's what Rashi says. Avo mishameis Yehoyada, az ba'ustara Yehud v'shtachabos l'malach v'sa'u elora. Okay, after Yehoyada died, you know what Yehoash wanted to do? He wanted to make himself a Kohen Gadol and king and be a god. He was going crazy. He took too much power upon himself. Alright? So he starts off as a very good king. You see, you know, high priest Yehoyada, right? Regent turned to the entire king, strengthened Torah observance, destroyed idol worship, repaired the temple. That's the topic of the Haftorah, Parsha Shkolim, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we did 2 weeks ago, but we're going to do it now. Rakabamos lo saru, Od ha'am midavchim u'makatrim ba'bamos. What are bamos at this time in history?
Soldiers.
Namely where?
On the high places.
Mm-hmm.
Not to Baal. That would be the north.
Turn to idolatry.
Although, the bamos, I mean, there are 3 different levels of wrong sacrifice that's going on. Because the Torah said the only sacrifice that can take place is in the Mishkan. That's the Mishkan. The 3 types of worship that were taking place very commonly in Sefer Melachim, and I will say them in order of severity. First is Baal worship. At this time, Yehu wiped out all Baal worship from the north. Very little Baal worship in the south, in Yehuda. Baal worship is mostly contained within the north. And Baal worship is real Avodah Zarah. The god of the clouds, the god of the sun, the god of the moon, the god of the orbits, the god of the planets. And they worship these various gods. The Sefer... Oh, let's see how I am.
Israel was involved, and then Israel was involved, and 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 Isra
it appears in the south. Egel worship is nothing else than what the Egel was in the Midbar. Setting up a physical structure and
representing worshiping.
Say worshiping as God. This is Elokei Abraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. This is the God that took us out of Egypt. Not this thing we just made with our hands. We know that we just made it. We know it's a physical object. It's just this represents the God that took us out of Egypt. You know what I'm saying? For instance, in Egypt, at sometimes the yellow disc in the sky that you could see during the day, you call it the sun, at sometimes that disc itself was worshipped. They bowed to that. Other times in Egyptian history, they turned monotheistic some of the dynasties. At other times, they did not worship the disc. The disc represented a god out there.
What about the ego? Was that also...
Yes,
ego. They worshipped it in Egypt.
No, that's Kuzari. They might have worshipped... There might have been there's some proof that they actually worshipped the calf and adored the calf or the sheep or the ram because it represented the god Ares in the heavens at that time. The ram was the astrological sign in the springtime, right? So that's called Egel worship, and that's what explains. Remember, we learned a few weeks ago that Yehu got rid of all the Baal worship but tolerated Egel worship. So if you don't know these, you're going to say, what's the difference? Both of those are.
Not.
Baal is much worse than Egel worship. Egel worship is tolerated many times during the day. It's bad. It's still, Hashem is very angry with the Egel in the Midbar, right? Moshe breaks the luchos over it. Because we're not supposed to qualify or quantify God in any way at all, right? You know, that's as a tangent, there's some who say that we make an Avodah Zarah out of the Kotel. Can you hear what I'm saying now? Because the people adore the Kotel. They put the notes and they think that the Kotel is the end all of everything. It's God. The deity is God. Then Rav Chaim Oizer said something amazing. He once said in a Musar Shmuz, I mean, you can bite your nails on this. He goes, let's not make an Avodah Zarah out of the Torah. What was he saying? He said that some people were so scrupulous about every little detail of the Torah that they were insulting people, embarrassing people, and stepping over the heads of people. There was once a kid who was so messing up his Torah portion, and he was starting to feel he was going to ruin this kid for the rest of his life. He said, stop correcting him. Torah is not an Avodah Zarah. You don't have to destroy this poor kid's self-esteem for the next 10 years because of something that's obvious, because reading the Torah is Rabbanan. Right? You following? So he's telling them, don't make an Avodah Zarah, don't make an all-powerful facade of something that it's not.
We don't need intermediaries.
Very careful about these things.
Well,
look, there's something called a Siman Tov. We do say Siman Tov Ma'aseh Tov. We do mean sweet things in Rosh Hashanah. We do acknowledge that there are psychological factors of colors and shapes and perfumes and other things that affect us. No doubt.
People say Segula for this at school.
Yeah, very careful. The only thing that's a Segula for is their wallet. I mean, in reality. And while there are certainly psychological factors, you give a Rebbe a nice little tip. I mean, when David was here, he said, did I give him enough? You know, and he just said, the Shmigadig, the Rebbe here.
Which
one?
You could say it.
So
which is the third? The Baal, the Egel, and the third Avodah Zarah?
Can you close the door? I'm just getting a little confused by the outside there.
Wait,
why is
Shmigia?
So, Shmigirov.
I think it was Shmigirov.
Yeah. But for the Shin Men Gimel in the same.
I mean, it's a little too easy to slip.
Yeah.
We should be careful how we.
Okay, so the third one is Bamot. Now Bamot is I can't put it in the realm of Avodah Zarah at all. Bamot is an altar made only to Hashem. It's totally a korban, only to God, in the way the Torah says to bring the korban.
But it's not in the Mishkan.
But it's not in the Mishkan. It's called Shchut Echad. It's outside of the Mishkan. Mm-hmm. What's the problem? Is that the Goyim used to bring korbanos every which way they pleased and whatever they wanted, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Originally, there's a Medrash that says that, you know, Bnei Yisrael demanded the korbanos. Hashem said, I don't need korbanos. The Goyim think they're feeding their gods with korbanos. I don't eat, I don't drink, I don't take libations, I don't do those things. He said, yeah, but we want to be like them. We want to worship you the way they worship. We don't want to feel any less of a servant than they do. So Hashem says, okay, but be very careful, because the temples of the Goyim are places of Avodah Zarah and Gilui Arayos and Shvichos Domim, and they have sexual deviances there, and everything goes, and the more outrageous they are, the better, and they have Shvichos Domim there too. They sacrifice people there, they
children,
drink blood, they burn children. And you know, I don't want God to show me your temple to turn into such a thing. So I'm going to tell you, I'm going to restrict you. I want to be very, very restrictive over who can work there, over how they can work there. And any small infraction of what I want you to do there, what I expect of you there, it's chayav misa. You come in there without washing your hands, chayav misa. Without washing your feet, chayav misa. You're not wearing all the garments. He's not wearing the Kohen Gadol isn't wearing his 8 garments. The Kohen Hedyot is not wearing his 4 garments. Everything's chayav misa. The Kohen's hair is a little too long, chayav misa. The death penalty. Very harsh punishments for any small
infraction.
Please confer another than Avihu, if you will. Right? You took the fire from the wrong place. Bang. Right. Let it be. Look what happens to Uzzah when he touches the earth. I mean, you see it. You want this, then you keep it very, very, very carefully in line, because I do not want it to turn into what happened in the ancient world. So that's Bamos is a very dangerous thing. Now, it's interesting. I just have another tangent on the Bamos, because it's so important now, because it's really going to come up so, very often. You see, when the problem is Egel and Baal worship, Bamos is not mentioned. Right? You know what I'm saying? People ask me, you know, why are you hocking on Kol Isha and at certain shul events? I remember mixed dancing, and I remember here at Oy Tzedek. So I say, listen. At that time, when they had mixed dancing at the dinners, and then they had these 8th grade Manhattan Day School mixers here in the social world, so dancing with 8th graders. Yeah, can you picture our 8th graders, boys and girls dancing together? So I said, at that time, in the 40s and 50s, the rabbis had to deal with a large population in an Orthodox shul, people who weren't keeping Shabbos, who were going to work right after shul, who weren't keeping kosher at home, though there was no mikveh use. And so there, the rabbi's going to talk about Kol Isha. So today, at Baruch Hashem, most of the women are using the mikvah, most of the people are keeping kosher, most of the kids are yeshivas, most of the people are keeping Shabbos. I don't have to give a sermon trying to make sure my people go to Shabbos lunch after shul. I remember a sermon like that in my old shul I grew up in. Because the men were going, there was a whole big geshrei, because men were going to work after shul. Right.
So when there's
Baal and Egel worship, you didn't hear too much about Bamos.
Right.
The fact that we're going to have a lot of talk about Bamos now is actually a move in the right direction in Sefer Melachim, because all right, as it's called Achshari Dori, as we're getting more kosher, we can start tackling lesser things that we couldn't tackle 100 years before. That's the old thing. Why are you more firm than such and such a person? You know, Achshari Dori, it's not the 60s anymore. And the places and camps, Camp Moshe, that want to still live in the 60s, I'm sorry, you're going to lose good people. That's why we had to leave. They still think they're in the 60s. I'm sorry for being political on that. But they're great places, but you know, again, there's some. I admit that there are some artificial frumkite things going on also. where it's not real. It's just for paper and public consumption. That I disagree with also. But when you tell me that things that are the Ferish halachas are part of that artificial frumkeit, I have an answer for you. When things get better, we can start bringing up other things. That's why you're going to see so much about the Bamos. So the Bamos is all totally to Hashem. It's perfectly good carbon, and therefore.
But the requirement is in the Mishkan.
Right?
So it's not.
And it doesn't even have to be a Kohen bringing it if it's outside of the Mishkan. You see a non-Kohen bringing it in the Bamos. Now, if you remember from 2-3 years ago, wait a second. You take a Shmuel, everyone's bringing a Kohen, whatever they want. Remember this? What did David say? What was David's excuse why he couldn't show up at that Rosh Chodesh Mesiva with Shaul was to kill him? I want to bring a Korban in Beis Lechem? Mishkan was never in Beis Lechem. What did Hashem tell Shmuel? Hashem himself told Shmuel to say this. If anybody asks you, why did you come here to Beis Lechem, and you're afraid to tell them that I came to crown a king because Shaul is still king, what should you tell them?
That you're coming to make sacrifices.
Coming to make sacrifices. Hashem is telling Shmuel to violate the pasuk in Vayikra.
No, but Shmuel's not going to actually do it, but people will believe it because that's what they're doing.
Then still it shows that it's forbidden. Still, you shouldn't be giving an excuse. I came here to eat pork. Still, it's forbidden to bring a carbon in Beis Lechem. So what's going on with those? And you know what? There are 30 other examples in Sefer Shmuel. This is a chapter in my master's thesis, which was the rabbinic reflections of violation of Torah law in the Nevi'im Rishonim. I'm being detected from.
Can you name all 30?
So here, I'll make the argument one step further. At the end of Sefer Yehoshua, it says that when Reuven and Gad and Chatzi Shevet Menashe went outside of Israel to live on the right side of the Yarden, right? It says that they set up a bomb.
Right. It was almost a civil war.
The other tribes wanted to go to war and conquer them over that. Killed 2.5 tribes. And they said, do you remember what happened with Korach, with Baal Peor? Remember with the Meraglim? What are you doing again, bringing Hashem's wrath upon us? Mm-hmm. By bringing the carbon outside of the Mishkan. And they're ready to go to civil war over this. And all over the place, and say for Shmuel, every Monday and Thursday, someone else has. I've had 30 examples in my master's thesis about places in Sefer Shmuel where people are bringing korbanos outside of the Mishkan. So the Gemara in Zvachim is well aware of this. You know what it's called?
So it depended where it was at that time.
It depends where the Mishkan was. When the Mishkan stood at Shiloh, or once it gets to Yerushalayim, no korbanos outside of those places. Those places are very set. Shiloh was a building. It wasn't just a curtain, it was a building. But whenever the Mishkan was in places other than Shiloh and Yerushalayim, there's so three places.
No,
Gilgal and Givon. I always tell my students, Gishnagi. Gishnagi, please see if Yossi remembers that.
That helps.
Ask him for the word Gishnagi. Gilgal, Shiloh, Nov, Givon, Yerushalayim. Okay. The more crazy it is, the more you're likely to remember.
I still remember some of these nonsense.
It's Moshe who remembers because I think it's what happened.
From high school, I still remember one.
Yeah. I had a teacher who taught us a certain Nevuah Yeshayahu in Yiddish, and he said, "You'll always remember this."
I
still remember it. There's been times that softened it takes, stark with kind, or hard and put toys. All mentioned it, human in common. So Gishnagi. So when the Mishkan stood at Gilgal, Shnov, and Givon, then what we call Bamos were allowed. It's called Heter Bamos. And throughout Sefer Shmuel, well, we know what happened at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel. Shiloh was destroyed by the Philistines. Right. Aaron was taken. So from then on, until the beginning of Malachim, almost were offered.
So there was no Mishkan.
There was no Mishkan. There was a Mishkan with curtains, but there wasn't a building with the Mishkan. So when it was in curtains, then you can offer korbanos outside. One kashi you may want to add. It says we learned earlier in about October. It said that even before Shlomo built the Beis Hamikdash, there is a pasuk that says Shlomo made everything good, the people were very, very righteous, just that they were still offering in Bamos. But wait a second, if it's before the Beis Mikdash is built, what's wrong with offering Bamos? Can you give an answer to that? Well, the Gemara says there was something called Heter Bamos. Why did the Tanakh say, I understand, after Yerushalayim is built, then there can be Pesukim that says, Rak HaBamos Lo Saru. Just that sticky little thing. This Rak means, only they're still bringing Bamos. So why is there a Pesuk like that before the Beis Mikdash is built? If you acknowledge the question. Think of an answer?
I think it's related to what you said when you said about when people went straight from shul to work,
yeah.
And it was the sign of the time of the Jewish people that they had a similar outlook, that they it was to tie them even in a less significant way to worshiping God, because they were dispersed. And they had to have the Bamos near them. They couldn't go to Jerusalem. They couldn't go wherever those places were. So they had to have something nearby.
Okay, I mean, going to shul, going to work from shul on Shabbos.
That was a bad analogy. It was a tie for them that they could.
Right, there's no question. They needed it.
Right, but, right?
Why did the biblical author show this displeasure with it?
Because it wasn't the right way.
Because there should have been a better way.
There should have been a better way.
The fact that they waited this long to build that building, Shiloh has been destroyed a long time already. Why? I mean, the Torah has a command: build God a house, right? So the fact that they're still in Bamos, to begin, even though it's Musar, I mean, it's a big, huge Musar. You can hide behind the cloak of permissibility, right? I'm not doing anything wrong. Well, it's true. Bamos were Musar at that time. But why rely on Bamos when you can be Yerushalayim Beis HaMikdash? Build it already, you know.
Yeah, but Hashem told David wanted to build it, and
Hashem said you can't do it. Well, that's why there's no such verse in Sefer Shmuel in David's time. That verse only appears after Shlomo has been king for some time.
How long did it take for Shlomo to?
It took him 7 years. But all right, it could be interesting. You're asking a good question. Why is it displeasure? Someone didn't want to build it beforehand. He said not to.
And you could say, once it's built, if the people still went to the bomb, it's like you got an old habit, right? And it's hard to change the habit and get back, you know, change your way of life, reorganize.
Well, try to think. All right, where are the two places that Yerovam built his two Egel worship places?
What were the two names? It was Beit El.
Beit El and Dan. In other words, it could never be too far from a holy place. As opposed to that temple in Jerusalem, if you live in Haifa and you got to bring a chatos, what a big tircha, right? Ah, but I'm going to make your life easy. I'm going to put these places nearby. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Now his two places, Dan and Beit El, were not Bamos, to be sure. They were Egel. That's the second level, Egel worship. But he's trying to tell the people, I'm pity on your,
So it would be kind of like taking Lincoln's and Washington's birthday and turning it into President's Day, which becomes a holiday, right? Always on a Monday.
Okay, let's go on. Vayomer Yehoash al HaKohanim, Kol kesef HaKodoshim Asher Yuvo Beit Hashem, kesef Ober, Ish kesef Nafshos Erko, Kol kesef Asher Yaleh Alev Ish Lavi Beit Hashem. This is an appeal. And he leaves it not as an obligation or a specific obligation. He leaves it like the Torah. Kol kesef asher yala levish. Whatever anybody wants to give. Now, I think you might remember about 3 years ago, the New York Times had a big splash on this on a Tuesday, Science Times, about that artifact that was uncovered. Apparently it had been around for many years. But someone finally got his hands on it to show this story on a stone.
Yeah.
This is the Mesha stone. And it describes this story with a number of all the same characters, Yehoshua, with a number of defining features, such as the collection, the fact that they did not take an accounting, they trusted the Kohanim, that whatever came in, they weren't going to skim off the top anything or line their own pockets or anything like that. And I said, we did not know, it was all going on. on the Sina Kadas, no one was forced to feel guilty about what they gave or to feel that they need a chesed. And there's another aspect in the stone that was found on this is that it gives mitznach, is that more than they needed was collected. How often does that happen in the peel?
That's a devil.
Okay, so let's do Pasuk Vav. Sheila, would you read
Yikula hamakonim ish me'et makaro v'hem yichesku et bedek habayit v'chol asher yimatzei sham badek.
Okay. So let the Kohanim go to their makaro, Lashon Lahakir, their friends, people they know. Okay. So v'hem yichesku et bedek habayit. Now bedek from the Lashon Livdok, but here it's bedek means literally a crack. Bedek is a crack. So that's what we call the collection of the community is called bedek abayis.
In modern Hebrew, is a sedek a crack?
Yeah, interesting. They call it the damage to the wall. Bedek
haschametz.
Okay. So it means it obviously comes to the word of dok, which means to search, to check. Right? It doesn't help as much, it just says bitka. It makes it seem that it's an Aramaic word. Right? Okay, so wherever you see the damage or part of the wall that needs repair.
Bedek in ha kala, does that come from the
That comes from an English word to bedek.
Really?
It sounds like to check. Yeah.
I think it's more, the B is not part of that. It's the deck. The deck someone has to put something above something.
Right.
I think it's on that word.
Don't finish it.
And the portion just says, because in order to repair something, first you have to check it, right?
Right.
Like Nehemiah, he sover is chamos Yerushalayim asher him putzim. Sover, which means to make a svara.
But the reason she ripped something that she can't see is like comes from Leah, right?
Not really. It comes from Rivka.
Right. You explained it very well.
Not that he had to check.
And he would be pulling it logically. It defied logic. He'd be doing this, not this.
He'd pull it off.
Right. This is where... That's how you explained it at our wedding.
Oh yeah. I mean, there is a tradition. There is a tradition that Sephardic women try to like give a hint that it's Leah walking down the aisle. No one says Leah. The women want this somehow without giving up the cover. Right. It's really Leah on the way, not Bracha. Okay, but he's really not checking. Alright, so Vayhi Bishnat Isrim, post the time.
Vayhi Bishnat Isrim, Shalosh Shana Lamelech Yehoash, Lo Chizka Konim, Beda Kabayit.
So it was now the 23rd year of Yehoash. He's still, a spry 30, right? But it's been quite some time.
Yeah.
And they still have not fixed all the breaches. They're still not finished. Right? Vayikra ha-melech Yehoash li-Yehoyada ha-Kohanim la-Kohanim deliver alayhem. Vadu ha-im ha-machadkin et bedek ha-bayis. Ve'ata al tikhu kesef meis makoreichem ki le-bedek ha-bayis titnuhu. Okay? So, he's saying, why aren't you fixing up the work here? Why is it taking so long? Now, they can say because everybody knows that every construction project ever started in the world, ever do some renovations in your house or something, and they say the kitchen will take 3 months, and 4 years later you're still wondering.
Ask Renee about that, right? In June, right? Going through that.
But it's also a good country because it's like take no more money, like stop taking money, and then he says, go fix it.
Yeah, so he says, now what does he mean, stop taking money from your acquaintances? only give it to Bedek Abayis. No.
Maybe they're taking money for themselves.
Yeah.
It's not going in the pot.
There's actually some fascinating chiddush that's going to come out of these psukim now, about this collection, that has to do with the date of Mashiach's arrival, believe it or not. Because Daniel said to wait a certain amount of time after they're no longer bringing the Korban Tamid in the Beis HaMikdash. Now everybody counts from when do you count? When should you count from?
The second destruction.
Second destruction, that's where most everyone counted. Some say, well, I count from the second, count from the first, when Daniel lived. But there were also some other times where there was a cessation of the Beis HaMikdash Korbanos. First of all, there was Hanukkah. The Hanukkah story, there was quite a long cessation, and then they started bringing Korbanos again. Right? Also, at the time of Ochuz, there was a cessation of the daily Korbanos, and in this time. Now, the collection of the Shkolim, not only was it to say that it's better Kabbalah than fixing the house, but there's a need to restore the Korban Tamid. So, the reason why I say this is because the Malbim, in his commentary to the Neo, gives five different possible dates for Mashiach's arrival based on, if assuming he has the right amount of years, based on the Sukkot. Adding those years and plugs it into each one of these, and when he plugged it into this one, he got 1915, according to the way we count the calendar.
So it didn't happen.
First World War.
It didn't.
Right?
It didn't.
That's what he predicted, that in 1868, we already wrote in his commentary to Yechezkel that Mohammed's Gog and Magog will involve all of the nations of the world, because he said Gog and Magog is Gematria 70. Which implies a world constellation.
I'm afraid he's right.
And he predicted the year for 1915. So he died long before that. But it's interesting is that he also predicted, based on Pesukim in Yechezkel, that the war would have Israel, the Jews, or Yerushalayim as central to the war, as a major part of the war. Because that's what Yechezkel says, that the war will be over, and the Jews will be
the issue.
Central issue, as Zechariah says in chapter 14. So, insofar as World War I did not involve the Jews as a central issue, but World War II is definitely an offshoot of World War I. One can make a good argument historically that the World War I and World War II were two of the same war fought over a 40-year period or so. Really, same war. It's an extension of the same war.
Well, it was issues that weren't resolved in World War I that got played out.
Correct.
But I mean, you could say that the Balfour Declaration grew out of World War I.
Mm-hmm.
The State of Israel grew out of World War II.
The British were carving up.
Yeah, World War II. You know, Hitler blamed the whole war on the Jews. Right? It was really, in a way, a war against the Jews.
Right.
So the Third World War, Jerusalem, the Jews are in place, and.
So Mohammed's Gog and Magog is going to this World War I and World War II together, and he based it on the years from this cessation. Because Daniel seems to talk about Shikutz, Shomein, Mizbeach Hashem, when there's no more Kabanos and God's Mizbeach, and from then on it's not going to start counting. So it seems that what it means is that I count from the worst that it gets for the Jews. Now, what, it makes sense to either count from the last one, as you just said, or to count from the first time that there's no more Kabbalah, which is now. Someday when we learn Daniel, I'll go through this Beferish at the end. It's very much the last two Pesukim of Sefer Daniel. Right? And it's fascinating how different commentaries came up at different dates. Some Ramban came up to 5100, which is 600 and some odd years ago. So others came up with 55, different proofs, but based on the same socket. It's amazing. Someone came up with 1665. Mr. Shabtai Tzvi's, of course, he came up with a date when he was around. If you have enough ingenuity, enough time to waste, you can figure out Mashiach is coming this year, too.
Based on Sukkot. We have something to look forward to.
But if it involves all the nations in the world, we're right in it.
Right, I prefer to say World War II was Muhammad's Gog and Magog, no matter what you say, because if it wasn't, then I don't want to fathom what will be.
But it didn't involve the whole world. Third world countries did not play a role.
No, I understand, but in Rubam Kehulam, in other words, it was called the World War because it was not just two one nation against another nation. It was
the whole world, pretty much.
The whole theater of the world, as they say.
Yeah,
okay. It developed well.
Had a happy ending.
Okay,
the state of Israel.
All right, so let's see how this story takes unfold. Now, I must tell you that in this story, we really need Divrei Yomim to supplement. I can say we're going to get to it today. We might have to get to it next week. We're really very much in need of Divrei Yomim. I think next Monday is Tom Sester.
Yeah. Are we having
Korea? We could have the evening. We obviously can't have.
Let's have
no coffee, no tea.
Okay, Vayosu Akonim Vilti Kichat Kesef Meisha Amru Vilti Chadegis Perik Haboyes. The Kohanim agreed not to take any more money and not to continue fixing the house.
And not to fix the house?
Yeah, let's see what that's all about.
Yeah, that's weird.
Right? Now, it seems here that the Kohanim were not acting well. The Kohanim were keeping some of the money. Why didn't they finish the job? Yehoyada Kohen Aron Echod Veikov Chor Bedelto. Yehoyada took a big Aron, like a
box.
Chest. And he made a big hole in it, like you have to put in for a slot for supper. He put it right to the right side of the Mizbeach. When anyone would come in, put money, and there was always a guard there. Okay? Right now, believe it or not, Divrei Yomim is very harsh about what's going on here. Divrei Yomim says that the Kohanim took the money, some of the money they literally used it for Baal.
Wow. Not even the others, it's the worst.
That's not even Egel, it's bad stuff.
Worse than Baal.
Alright? Okay. Bad use of talking money. Okay, so that's where they made a new collection. They told us we need $3, but he killed some.
And he killed some. He brought Hakesef Aaron, but yeah, also for Hanawak, the Kohen, the Dodo, the Yatsro, the Yemu, the Hakesef, and then Sabbath, the Fed Hashem.
When they saw that there was so much money in here, what did they need to raise money for? To pay workers. Pay for articles, pay for they needed different tools and things. So they counted the money. Menasnuas hakesef hamnesukon, from the word matkones, right? Token. Total. The money that was counted, right? Al yidei osteh hamalacha ha-mufkadim beit Hashem ve'yotziu l'charashe ha'eitz l'bonim ha'osim beit Hashem. Very simple. They took the money and they used it for what they needed to give to the carpenters and the builders because they needed the material.
So why in Pasuk Tes does it say that they would not take money and not repair the damage?
They didn't under those earlier circumstances. Okay.
Well, no, they changed the system of giving. You're not giving it to a person, and you're putting it in
the giving
box.
It to the box, the guard. Okay. And they also have to pay for Godrim, Chotzvei Eben, the Knosei Tziv, the Avnei Machzev, Lachazek Esbelek, the Hashem. This is
a building.
You're going to raise funds. You can't just say, give us money, we need money.
So
say what you can use it for.
So instead of going into the pockets of the individual priests, it went into like a trust fund, if you will.
Well, Chol Asher Yitzei Al Habayitah, whatever they needed, plaster, whatever they might need for fixing the house, this is what this chest is for.
Yeah, but the Bama were in a house where they were just altars. That's what I'm confused about.
No, the Bamas were altars just anywhere you wanted.
So what house are they fixing? Mishkan?
No, now they're fixing the base of Mikdash. No, this is the Mikdash they're fixing. This is the big house on Kolan Harabayas. Karen, would you read that? You don't need
to know what this house is. Ahloya, after Beit Hashem, the Pod Kesef, Mizam Rot, Mizrakot, Chatit Rot, Kol Klei Baha, the Klei Kesef, Niha Kesef, Hamubah, Beit Hashem. However, there would not be made for the house of the Lord silver pitchers, musical instruments, basins, trumpets, or any golden or silver utensils from the money brought into the house of the Lord.
Okay, this passage is really problematic because in Tiberi Yamim it says that they have used this collected money for some musical instruments and other things. So, Meforshim tried to explain that what our pasuk is saying is that no money went to buy any of those things until all the repairs were finished. Then there was money left over, as that stone, by the way, indicates also. There was money left over. And that stone has been, by the way, downstairs.
Right, you can see that if you're looking at Tetbach together with Yud Dalet, that makes sense.
Yeah, possibly. In other words, you can still, even in light of Pasuk Yudalit, suffer a Pasuk to say that they did use some of this money when all is said and done on some other items, right? And it makes sense. You don't work on the musical artistic part of the Mishkan, the Beis HaMikdash, while the Beis HaMikdash itself is still finished. The money was only for work. The Chizkubo is based on Hashem, then afterwards you could buy flowers. You know what I'm saying? You could beauty, make beauty and music. Okay? Ted Zion, Talbot, would you read 16?
16, yeah. 15. Mm-hmm. 15. 16. 15.
I just read it.
And they brought not the corn in the man into whose hand, and they will give the money to give the foreman over the work, for they did the work honestly. The money for guilt offering and the money for sin offering would not be brought to the house of the Lord. They will go to the priest. They will go to the priest. Then Hosea the king of Aaron.
You know, let's stop there. Okay, so. So it says that they collected money for all of these things. Okay. Then plus the design is that at this point they didn't have to make a reckoning, they trusted them. It might have been a foolish thing given what we saw earlier, right? They would not have trusted before. But Levine said at this point they trusted them. And then they also had to bring some sacrifices. Okay? Now you'll notice that in the next page, in the page afterwards, there's a huge Ralbah. What is all that? So the answer is that I think I mentioned this once before. The Ravad does this every few chapters, every four or five chapters. The Ravad has a pedagogical approach to his commentary where after each major section of a biblical story, he will tell you the 40 to 50 things we learned from this story. In Midos, in Deos, in Musar. Very valuable. I'm saying, the schools don't use it enough. The Ravad was like almost an exagiat form until very recently. Now you can buy the Perush to the Torah also. So that's why sometimes you run into these. You can actually see if you look carefully and study. Hayud Aleph, Hayud Beis, the 10, the 11th thing you learned from here, the 12th thing you learned from here. It's just really very long and very. Right. Yeah, Beis, the Huba Midos. Shlishi Hula Hodiya Eich, Hayach Omel, Hashem Yisparach, Al Yisrael.
Just in terms of You don't have to get into it. But at the bottom of page 331, you have the Sudat Gavi. Is that what goes over to 332? And then you have the Ralph.
No, not at all. Sudat Gavi is a very, very short.
Sudat
Gavi
is very short.
Very short.
Okay.
Sudat, both of them are very short.
Okay, so what goes over.
The Ralph is
Sudat Gavi and Sudat Gavi, both commentaries of the same author, a man named David Altshuler, who wanted to write a pure pshat commentary with two forms, one that gives explanation of words, and the one that gives explanation of concepts and stories.
So he wrote both?
The words. He wrote both, David Altshuler, but he only got to write Nevi'im Rishonim and Yeshayahu, and he died, and then his son took over, Aaron Altshuler, but allowed the rest of the commentary to be called Mitzvah David in his father's honor. David.
So what are some of the things that Rabak says we learn from these things?
It's
about like issues of tzedakah and collecting money and what to do with the money.
Yeah, things you can make in the sermon. lovely things.
Taking that
material
from right here.
Uh-huh. I don't know if this is exactly the best thing.
Is there any booster in here about plagiarism?
I don't think you attribute it to something else.
We know that you can
take
that money for one
thing
and then use it.
For
another,
so it's
333, is that?
We're off over
to 333. So it's expected that you hold the money and go for it. You tell them, this money is not to be collected for artistic things, right? And or according to the Institutarium, and specifically, not unless everything else is covered from here. We will sometimes say this like on Matanos Savionim. We say you can fulfill Matanos Savionim by giving this money, right? And some of your money will certainly go to that, but if not enough of Yonim come around, now we still call Israel, like before we say, all right, everything we have left, you will be using $1,000 for euros, and you're spending, give the money on for over Yom to satisfy the needs for until instead of Yonim. And this way we say, we tell people that your money is being covered. Right? All right, Amaisa, let's just finish this paragraph. Because now we're going to a very, very different topic. Oz ya'aleh hazo'el melech Aram ve'ilachem al gas v'yilkidah v'yesem hazo'el panav v'alot zal Yerushalayim. Take a look, please, at the map. You see, towards the top right-hand corner of the whole book, it says Aram. Mm-hmm. Above the, what's that, yeah. David sticker?
Yeah.
Right? That's where Hazo'el is.
Okay.
Now, if it says that he conquered Gat, wow, he had to go all the way south, down to Moab, across the Kadesh Barnea, and back up to Gat. Gat is near the word Kingdom of Judah.
Right above
here,
the G.
Between the D and the O, right above the D. See, Gat, Geth, that's where Shimshon is from. Goliath, go.
He really conquered in battle.
Yeah. It goes all the way around.
So now...
He can, he couldn't have gone straight through Israel. It wouldn't. And then from Gath, he wants to go to Yerushalayim and probably sandwich that. He has more troops coming from the north. And now he's in the south, right? See it?
Uh-huh.
He can surround them. So let's see what's happening. Now, remember, hold it. Do you remember who this Chazoel is?
Is he the one with Elisha?
Yes. He's the one that Eliyahu told Elisha to crown king.
Fabian,
now I don't have to call you.
Come on in.
Yes, he is the one that Eliyahu told Elisha to crown king. Remember that? He said, crown Yehu ben Nimshi as king, crown Hazael as king of Aram, and crown and replace yourself with Elisha. Remember that? Elisha ben Shaphat Nabi Tashkeva. So remember when Elisha went over to Hazael and said, he was an officer in the army, he said, you're going to be the next king of Israel, or next king of Aram. He goes, what, me? Little me? I'm nobody, I'm just in a general. And then the Nabi started crying. He said, why are you crying? Because apparently he was a good person at the time or something. I don't know, he served God's bidding and killing off some Bakov's descendants. And he told Chazal, because I know that you are going to one day do bad things to our people. Right? You will be one day doing bad things to our people. And Chazal said, wow, why would I do such a thing? I'm just a lowly servant. And here he is. He did it. So the king of Aram went to fight against Gat, and he conquered it, and he turned his face to come to Yerushalayim. Yes.
He's not the general who had leprosy, is he? Okay.
No, that was Naaman. He was not that time king. But it was the same nation. Okay. So let's see what happens. ויקח יהואש מלך יהודה את כל הקודשים אשר הקדישו יהושפט, יהורם, אחזיהו, אגוסטב, מלכי יהודה ואת קודשיו ואת כל הזהב הנמצא בארצות ישראל את השם בבית המלך וישלח לחזאל מלך ארם ביום מעל ירושלים. What did Yehoash do? He took all of the money that was dedicated, all the treasuries of Yehoshaphat and Yehoram and Ahaziah, that's his father, his grandfather, and his great-grandfather, all the treasuries they had, all the holy things that were donated, all the gold that was in his treasuries, and the house of God, and the house of the king, and he sent it to Hazael as a bribe. So he left Yerushalayim. Another gross contradiction to Divrei Hayamim. In Divrei Hayamim it says that Hazael still conquered Yerushalayim, killed many people and took prisoners. So this is a very serious contradiction. Here it says that he didn't fight, and it says that he did.
Wow.
So we can work that out very easily also, really.
Yeah. Came back and
the this was after the fighting that he gave him the prize.
Two different times, yes. Why did Malachim and Divrei tell the story from two different perspectives? Well, we'll see if we can do that. But one thing that's very clear that we need to do next week, if we finish this parak, be more quick, is to read the parak in Divrei. V'yetzei Divrei Yoash v'chol asher asah Elohim k'suvim al Sefer Divrei Yamim Malchei Yehuda. More stories about Yoash if we read in Sefer Divrei Yamim. Because what is it? What does our parak not even mention, for goodness sakes? Look at the box on.
I wrote the.
Doesn't mention E, F, G, H. It doesn't mention any of this. Doesn't mention that he turned toward the idolatry. Doesn't mention he made himself a god. And doesn't mention any of these things. So Sefer Malachim is really treating Yoash very nicely. Yekumu Avadav, but it does mention H. Yekumu Avadav Yekshu Kosher. Yekuas Yoash Beis Milo Ayurei Tzila. The place. Okay. They Yeshu Kesher means they made a revolt. The reason why a revolt is called Kesher. Remember last week, Natalia screamed out, Kesher, Kesher! She thought that maybe she can get some people on her side, but she found out that no one was on her side. They all wanted her killed. So they killed him in such a place. They used, remember, Sally, would you read the last Cossack? Cossack. Oh boy, we'll have to start there. We're not even going to continue with chapter 13 next week. It's much easier. This pasuk is also sorely contradicted. First of all, it says in the Yamin that Yosefar and Yehoshaphat were an Ammonite and a Moabite. It doesn't seem that way here. Tosfos says the Pharisee he was not buried with his family.
In
the Vayomim. He was buried in. Boy, we're going to have to work on this. Rashi quotes the Medrash that says that he behaves like the Ammonites and Moabites, who did not return. Why only Ammon and Moab punished with not being able to join the Kehillah for not greeting us with bread and water in the desert? No one greeted us with bread and water in the desert. They're closely related to us. Of course, they hired their own, but we can put it, it's closely related to us. Right? So they were kufui tov. So too, Yoash was the ultimate kufui tov. The person who saved your life, the person who raised you, the person who made you a successful king, was Yehoyada. What did he do? He told Yehoyada, Yehoyada's son, Zechariah.
He took that.
It's not here, it's in Divrei Yomim.
Why did he do
that? Zechariah tried to get him to do tshuva after he became so bad after Yehoyada. Remember, we learned in the pasuk earlier that as long as Yehoyada was alive, he was good. Right? So when Yehoyada died, he turned bad. Yehoyada's son Zechariah tried to get him to do tshuva. And he killed him. Zechariah said, when he was stabbed right before he died, he said, "May God avenge my death." Remember this? Do you remember the saying appeared on Tisha B'Av about the Yehuzradan, and he found the blood boiling out of the ground, and he tried to figure out whose blood that is, and he would know. He kept on killing more and more Jews until someone could tell him whose blood it is, and they said, "Fine, it's the blood of Zechariah, who's now playing the song." Okay. Boy, it's getting really...